What is up, beautiful people? Welcome back to the Built on Bitcoin podcast, where we cover all the innovation happening across the Bitcoin ecosystem. And what does that mean? That means that Stax, RSK, Lightning, Liquid, and Bitcoin Main Chain are all first-class citizens on this podcast. So don't think you'll find that in many other places. And so today I have a fantastic interview with Max Efremov. He is a developer evangelist at Hero Systems. If you see this orange in this logo, that's them. They are a developer tooling company, and they focus on Bitcoin tooling for developers. They started mostly focusing on Stax, and they are now branching out more focused on things like Ordinals, Bitcoin Main Chain, Lightning. So a ton of stuff they do for the ecosystem, cover a ton. I wanted to get a pulse of the current state of building on Bitcoin as a developer. So we cover that. Talk about the mindset shift from Web 2 to Web 3 as a programmer, and how when you're working with these giant systems that we call blockchains, that are really just giant systems that tell you who owns what. Just they answer that question over and over and over. They do it very, very well. When you're doing that, how different is it trying to build a smart contract and program in that way versus kind of like the old model in JavaScript and that kind of thing? So we cover a ton. This one was super, super fun to discuss and explore. So without further ado, let's jump into this episode with Max Efremov, developer evangelist at Hero Systems.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Max, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing really well. I'm really excited for this. We'll probably get into it a little bit, but I'm really excited because I am normally the interviewer on my show, Web3 on Bitcoin, and I'm normally the one driving the conversation into what my guests have. And after some conversation with you and your invitation to actually be the interviewee, it's a nice change of pace. So I'm really excited about that.
Very excited to have you. It's exciting times on Stax for sure, but Bitcoin L1 innovation, kind of like it seems like the culture is shifting again, and like the narrative from Bitcoin is just separation of money from state and just a way to like transact value is moving to a more expansive definition. And there's a lot to explore from the dev side, and so you are a perfect person to talk to because You do have your show, which people should definitely check out, Web3 on Bitcoin. But typically, builders are in the background. You know, they're more comfortable behind the keyboard. They don't typically, you know, get in front of camera. And even if you get them, sometimes it's hard to tease out the best ideas. They're not amazing at formulating them. And you've been a great synthesizer in the ideas I've seen so far, the episodes I've seen so far. So, ton to talk about as far as building on Bitcoin. But just to start, I'd love to make it equally about the ideas and the people. And so I'd love to just get a quick, brief background of your background.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that. Thanks for the kind words. I am often in the position of having to synthesize and then summarize to people from all different kinds of backgrounds, whether they're brand new to Stax or they've been around a blockchain space for 10 plus years. So my name is Max, and I actually work at Hero. Stax is the blockchain of Node, but Hero is the developer tooling company for Stax, helping developers build on that blockchain, which is intimately tied to Bitcoin, something we'll get into if your guests don't know. Stax is the smart contract layer for Bitcoin. And the goal, which some of the blockchain upgrades that are coming out this year, the goal is to actually have smart contracts on Stax actually broadcasting transactions to Bitcoin. So in a decentralized, trust-minimized way, bringing these smart contracts and smart contract logic to Bitcoin, which, as we know, is a dead simple application. It does one thing. It just sends Bitcoin from point A to point B. Stax has been in the space for a while. I joined Hero, I'm coming up on a year almost, which is pretty mind-blowing. End of May, so it's end of February now. And before that, I'd say most relevantly, in 2020, I started work as a machine learning developer. So I was basically a Python developer working on back-end systems and creating and fine-tuning natural language processing models. So taking in, and I was working at a healthcare company. And what was really cool was is that we were working on, it was a small startup that had been acquired by a bigger company. And we were working on problems that really just needed solutions quickly. And so I was working with like 100 million plus records of unstructured data, doing a bunch of some fancy natural language processing and also some very, very simple hacks and cool solutions that I got to implement. And I was there not very long before the flame of crypto, specifically DeFi, I was just took me completely, kidnapped me. In 2020, I was watching and like with some sort of like indication that there was something interesting going on, but pretty confused about like what they were calling DeFi summer. And then by the winter was basically inhaling it, and then left my tech job to work on some projects, including a cohort-based course. So I was teaching people about this new era of blockchain-enabled applications, including some developers and founders. So I wasn't teaching people development, but I was teaching people who wanted to build applications, like what's possible, what are these DeFi primitives, like what is a swap, what is an automated market maker, what is a money market. And that also built on my background in economics and finance. I have a background in economics with some interest in monetary economics and also Austrian economics, which has seen a huge resurgence in Bitcoin. This was like 2015 to 2017 for me when I was really going deep on economics. So, and then after all that educational work and given my development experience, I met the CEO of Hero, and this developer advocacy role was created and established for me to come meet our users and teach them everything it is that I can about the suite of tools, products, services that Hero offers. The flagship API services, we also built the Explorer, the Blockchain Explorer, and then a ton of other tools for developing smart contracts, whether, you know, Clarinet, which is the command line tool for and testing harness for smart contracts, to the JavaScript libraries that support you know, the front end application. So there's a ton that we offer. We have a very smart, incredible team. I'm really, really grateful and lucky to be working alongside them, because actually there's a lot I don't know. You know, Python development is not really that similar to developing a Clarity smart contract, which we'll get into, but there's a lot I've had to learn, and I've been digging into it and trying to make myself as much of a bona fide Stacks developer as I can. So anyway, that wasn't a very brief introduction, but I think it's a little.
That's okay. You opened up Pandora's box, so I got a lot to work with. We can go many ways. Very interesting though. AI background. Quickly, what were you doing before AI? How long have you been a dev?
I've been a dev since 2019. So not very long. And then my background is kind of interesting. Actually, during my time as a tech worker, I was also, for instance, working with the Texas congressional delegation to implement bipartisan immigration reform. So I was meeting with Texas's congressional delegation to talk about their interest and openness in like huge, huge bets on immigration. I was working alongside this eccentric, rich guy who believes in these moonshots. So he's like, the odds of this are 1 in 1,000 and $1 trillion impact. So the expected value is still super high. We take that bet all day. And then before I worked at, that was Ideal Immigration. And then before that, I had some unrelated backgrounds in public service and community service, I'd say. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So there's a through line there of trying to work towards a better future, which for me is one of the biggest things about why Bitcoin makes me excited. Is like so many people nowadays don't have hope in the future. Like my future is not gonna be as good as my parents, you know, was, you know, 50 years ago or whatever, based on economics and whatever it is. And to me, getting into these Austrian economics, Bitcoin, reining in policy or smarter policy, that's like the biggest bull case for why we need crypto. That's just a side note. I want to touch on the debt point again, though, or unless you have something to say.
That is the thread. That is for me the thread to the 100-year vision. We were talking about this on Twitter. We'll get to it at some point. I think. But there's something strange has happened. It's a whole long story. But some key words for your guests for our guests to search are like Tyler Cowen's The Great Stagnation. Hypothesis. Peter Thiel has talked about this too. The sense in which technological improvement, economic growth, all of this it feels like it's kind of slowed down. I mean, it has slowed down. And why is that? Is it because are we getting dumber? Are we getting, have all the good ideas been plucked? Or is it this kind of weird institutional slowdown? Like our institutions, like we're overregulated. We have a Federal Reserve printing money. The price signal that interest rates, signal like how much latent capital is truly available, how many unused resources are truly available. That interest rate signal is completely distorted, and this just kind of leads to, anything from like malinvestment to it's hard to build a five building apartment building in San Francisco. There's 2,000 people that can veto you building anything new in the city, and that's why housing is so expensive. It's this weird, and it's not because we're not smart enough. It's because it feels like there's this institutional slowdown. These bureaucracies that are really slow and kind of like backwards looking and like. Anyway, this is a really important subject, and I find that Bitcoin is this deeply disciplining, magical quantity, right? It can't be tampered with. It has these new rules that actually don't require, our policymakers. We don't have to trust them. We can just look at the blockchain. No one can change these rules. When I realized that this is what was happening, just like, everyone wants to get orange pilled. They realize, oh my gosh, this is like a fundamentally paradigmatically new thing, and it's ways of coordinating behavior that don't require a trusted third party. So, I can stop there. But Bitcoin is an important part of that future of a world in which like we're just more generative, more vital, and just building more.
Very interesting. Yeah, I've heard that Tyler Cowen piece mentioned multiple times, so I'll have to check it out finally, make the time. But yeah, it sounds trite, but people will say like Bitcoin is hope, and it sounds cliche, but it's very real to me. And there's a quote that I repeat in my head a lot, which is that you don't see the world as it is, you see the world as you are. And when it comes to crypto, once you see the world that way, it's hard to unsee it, but there's still so much to build. So it's hard from a dev perspective to get Web 2 devs to make the jump to Web 3. And then even more so, I'm teaching myself how to code, so I'm learning Clarity a little bit and learning front-end development. And it wasn't till getting into crypto that I had the confidence to say, I could learn this stuff. I could type on the computer and it's going to spit back what I put in. So if I mess up, it's my fault. It's not the computer's fault. Let me learn this. And but that mindset took forever. I've always loved tech, back from like the Kevin Rose Attack of the Show days to like Dig to Reddit to all those things. So I've always been an observer, but never wanted to partake. And so I'm curious, when you made the jump in 2019 to get into dev, did that feel weird? Any advice for people making that jump? Just for like the new devs, I'm very curious about that, because I think that's a big, thing that if we could get people to instill, it'd be a big like level.
Yeah. Yeah, great question. I've actually, I've answered something similar a lot of times and supported a number of friends and acquaintances in their career changes into software development. So I did a boot camp known as, at the time, Lambda School. I believe that they've changed now since to Bloom Tech. Austin Allred's boot camp. Novel in that it had this great income share agreement, it's called, where instead of like a student loan, where I'm on the hook no matter what my kind of career outcomes are, instead the bootcamp is only paid if and when I get a job. And if I don't have a job, I don't get one, or I lose my job or whatever, then they're not getting paid back. So really incentive aligned institution, which was great. So that's like a kind of to one of, you know, many different options that are available. And so it was, I will say that it was definitely intimidating. And I had this story that if you didn't start developing when you're 5 years old or 12, then the ship has sailed and you're never gonna be able to get it. And it's just not true. It's not true because, you know, there's nothing that attention and effort won't solve. So there's something like that, right? So just like showing up, paying attention and learning these things helps. Also, part of the story was that I'm just never going to get as good as all the people that are out there already. And for that, the world is really, really, really complex. These systems, these software systems that support our, you know, modern economy are very, very, very complex. And you can actually become the expert on a tiny part of a system or systems generally. And so, you know, you can kind of be in a room with the creator of whatever software system that millions of people use, someone who knows some tech stack very deeply, and they don't know what you know, because they haven't taken the time to learn about the ins and outs of, like, for instance, Clarity, the smart contract programming language on Stacks, which is different than Solidity, the most popular, most widely used Web3 smart contract language. You may not be a so-called JavaScript or front-end expert, and yet when you're working on your company's system, you may well be the only person that knows how these different, you know, pieces and components work. So it's hard to overstate how much complexity there is, and so how much opportunity there is. This guy, Patio 11, Patrick McKenzie is his name, and I'll send you the tweet so that we can include in the show notes. He has this, someone named a law after him called Patio 11's Law, which is specifically the software economy is bigger than you can imagine, even after hearing Patio's Law. Meaning, I'm telling you have no idea how big the software economy is. And I'm telling that, so you think it's really big, and you still don't realize how big it is. Like, there are companies whose monthly engineering budget spend is like tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. There's so much opportunity out there. It's ridiculous. And that's, you know, maybe there's a whole sidebar conversation about AI and codecs and, you know, AI enabled software development. That's a whole other conversation.
Well, it's on my notes, but we'll see if we get there, because there's so much to cover. I'll just double click on something, because the insecurities you mentioned were the exact ones in my head. And the reason I found Stacks was because of Clarity, because I was trying to de-risk my insecurities in some sense. So it's like, I can go Web2, Web3. Web2 is super mature. It's been, you know, people been building since the MySpace days and before then. So those guys who have been doing it forever are going to beat me. Let me go to the fresh frontier of Web3. That was my first, like, smart bet to de-risk. And then it was, well, if I do that same thing again, it's Solidity versus something else. And Solidity is already starting to take root. So it's like, I'm fighting with these mature devs. Let me go to a bluer ocean, if you will. And so it was Solidity or, and then I saw Trevor Owens' tweet and it was Clarity. And I was like, okay, cool. I saw like a machine code. It looks all messy and black. And then it was like human readable code on the purple side and it was Stacks. Yeah. So I jumped in. I started learning for like 2 months, got discouraged, started a podcast instead. Here we are. Now, 2 years later, I'm coming back on to learn Clarity. But that insecurity was exactly what I felt. And I think you're right. Just there's so much nuance, so much like granularity to each piece that if you put in the work and just learn it, you'll be totally fine. I want to start diving into the dev pieces then. We've mentioned Clarity a few times. And before we get into that, though, I'd love to get, if you do believe in the Bitcoin thesis, so like if you're in Web3, there's a lot of money going to Solidity, and if you want to go learn that side. But if you believe in the Bitcoin thesis, could you give us an overview from a dev perspective? What does that look like from Clarity to Lightning to whatever Bitcoin script is? Like what's the lay of the land currently if you're trying to extend use cases for Bitcoin?
Yeah, great question. So there's all of development, all of software development, there's Web3 is within that. And then within with Web3, there's like Ethereum and Ethereum, like EVM compatible chains that you know, typically their smart contract applications are written in Solidity. And then there's Bitcoin and layers or maybe even single applications that live on top of Bitcoin, of which some of the biggest are Lightning, RSK, Stacks, a number of others. And so, these all enable, extend Bitcoin functionality. So Bitcoin obviously is the first blockchain and intentionally is very, very simple, and which provides it just completely unparalleled security. There are no DeFi hacks on Bitcoin because there's no DeFi. And when Solidity was made, this smart contract programming language about 6 years ago, five or so years after Bitcoin, instead of just single application blockchains, let's add like kind of a virtual machine or a kind of computational layer to these blockchains. That was Ethereum, an innovation that's now been copied by many, many other blockchains. And Solidity is that programming language. And when Solidity was conceived of, we had no idea just how much value these smart contract applications would hold inside of them. Like how much economic resources would be committed to these things. We've realized and have the experience and the data to show it's billions, tens of billions of dollars. I think a high watermark was like $100 billion or so dollars in fall last year. And these smart contracts are open source code. So these aren't, they're total honeypots. And DeFi hacks have been, I don't think anyone realized just how bad these would be. It's for a while there in the last kind of bull market cycle, every week there was like $1 billion hack, it seemed like. There was just something totally outrageous. If you go to rekt, R-E-K-T, .com, I think they have a leaderboard of DeFi hacks. It's gross. Enter Clarity. So Stacks was Clarity virtual machine and kind of the smart contract layer for Bitcoin was conceived of after Ethereum and its example of, you know, these DeFi hacks, these bugs, these vulnerabilities, these exploits, a big attack surface. And Clarity was designed from the ground up to mitigate that. The core difference is that it is a decidable language, meaning it is not Turing complete, which is a computer theoretic way to describe a system that can kind of compute anything, so long as you have like the memory and the processing space and time for it. Clarity doesn't have for loops, doesn't have conditional jumps, and it's much more therefore explicit, which for at first may seem like, why would you want to like, you know, give up features? Why would you want to, you know, make a kind of quote unquote dumber virtual machine? And we have found two main things. One, that it makes it safer. It makes it more secure, more predictable, more reliable. And then two, there isn't any like core DeFi functionality that's existed on Solidity that we can't create a version of on Clarity. We actually haven't found this to be a meaningful limitation. It is another language, and you do have to learn it. And it is like more similar to Lisp than it is, say, like JavaScript. So there's a learning curve there. But the trade-off is that it's more secure, more reliable. You can also do gas estimations because you have a static call graph. You know exactly what the operations are because the language is decidable. You know everything that's going to happen. And so when you're proposing a transaction, you know exactly how much STX will cost to mine that transaction. So that's a little bit about Clarity. I think I was going to make another point, but I forgot. Any questions about that?
I have some about Clarity, but I am curious more, not even more, but is there anything about Bitcoin main chain, specifically like there's this new ordinals craze. And so right now we're seeing, especially in the investor side where I spend my time a lot now, is Stacks is getting some interest. Like we're seeing the token price pump and people are exploring it. That's fantastic. But the real interest is coming in from people are realizing that L1 is not fully explored. Things like Taproot, which is the biggest one, unlocked a lot, and people have not pushed Taproot to its limit. So I'm curious about your thoughts on any of that when it comes to Taproot or building for things like ordinals on Bitcoin main chain.
Yeah, I think what's possible with Bitcoin Script and Taproot, I think we're still in like early, relatively early exploration phase. A buddy of mine actually just told me that he wrote a kind of brilliant conditional multi-sig native to Bitcoin L1. So there are addresses that have like spend conditions based upon, kind of not just multi-sig, but like you can imagine, my lawyer and my accountant, if the two of them sign a transaction, then we can spend this Bitcoin account. If another party, assigns a transaction, then within 100 blocks, it opens it up to two other people. These kind of branching logic trees of who's available, who's allowed to spend this Bitcoin, have implications for insurance companies, for big mining operations. It adds a layer of security, and all of that is happening on the L1. Oh man, my friend's gonna kill me. I'm gonna have to look up his name of this company. But anyway, this is a relatively new, very new company. He's got customers. He's raising. He's doing this whole thing. Ordinals is also the most recent kind of innovation here in the kind of L1 space. As Casey Rodimer, I forget how to pronounce his last name, but as he has said, that this isn't the first one to come up with this idea. This has been kind of mentioned a few different places, but he's the first one to really just go full hog and implement the kind of abstraction layer, the kind of consensus conventional rules that we now agree about how to track Satoshis. And this is my regret right now is that I have not actually yet taken the time to dive very deep into ordinals to see how it works at the kind of wallet level, how these how the different op fields are filled in and like where the data exists exactly. And actually, to be totally transparent, my interaction with Lightning and with RSK, Liquid is another Bitcoin layer. Is limited to, in some instances, just basically using their kind of flagship product. I don't know how to develop with those tools or build applications with them. Again, I spend my time going deep on Stacks and keeping track of development in our field, and then also diving deep on our products. And but that said, there's things happening on L1 for sure, and it's just it is fundamentally limited. It's it was intentionally not designed to actually have or carry a lot of compute on the L1. And that's great. I love that. I think everyone loves that. Obviously a super majority of miners and users love that. And you know what? I don't want anyone to use Stax or any of these Bitcoin layers that they don't want to. While I have my convictions about security and the, you know, various guarantees about a blockchain and kind of our hash digest, the finality on Bitcoin state, all of the innovations and features that Stax brings, I don't need everyone to have those same convictions. We welcome curiosity. There will always be Bitcoin maximalists who dislike really anything besides native BTC blockchains. And I frankly, Bitcoin is open for anyone to use. And so that a community wants to create Stax, wants to, with the SBTC proposal, the Nakamoto proposal for Stax, if the community voluntarily wants to send Bitcoin to an SBTC escrow Bitcoin address, that then wrapped tokens are then minted on the Stax chain, whatever happens, DeFi, new applications, new innovations, whatever happens, if someone wants to do that, that's totally their prerogative. Bitcoin is open source for anyone to say otherwise, I think contradicts its entire ethos. And I'm also very, very in understanding and aligned on the incredible number of bad actors and just outright scams and Ponzi-like, terrible projects out there. I think that's a big lesson from this last market cycle. Is like 98% of these blockchains and these protocols and these applications are money grabs. They're not actually driving or delivering value. And so I completely understand the wariness. The thing is though, is if like, it's a good heuristic to say like, oh, a new blockchain needs to prove itself before I trust it. Great heuristic. You could apply it to 99% of blockchains or 99.9% of new applications, right? But if your base rate is do not experiment, do not innovate, then you're going to be wrong the one time or the two times when a new step function innovation happens that then carries with it like broad adoption. And so you have to have a strong prior, and if you want to live and survive, you also have to be open to experimentation and being open to new things. Is, in my humble opinion, the state of innovation on Bitcoin, say.
Very, very well said. Couldn't agree more. I think that the fact that Stax is a token drives some groups absolutely bonkers. And when you say the 98% line, it's like, okay, I get it. But you also have to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater and differentiate between a good faith actor trying to extend a use case in a specific line of thinking. And it's also funny to see the Ordinals transformation of, they say things like it's tricking the code. And it's like, well, you're building an immutable ledger and you're giving it constraints. People are going to do what they're going to do. Like, they're going to push it to its limits. So tricking the code, that seems like very, there's some cognitive dissonance there. But you want to believe one thing but say another. Mm-hmm. But
it's interesting because I'm sympathetic to people that are like, Ordinals is like, it's only no one thought about this design or this utility or this possibility when the various like BIPs were proposed and Bitcoin was created. And so I understand that, and also it just comes with the territory. We're just learning. We're constantly learning all the time. I mean, because here's the thing: according to that logic, it there's an argument to be made that DeFi hacks are not actually hacks, because if the blockchain space logically permits it and someone published that code, you know, it's legal. It's logically legal. We have human notions about, you know, fairness and this and that, and which are important, and I do want to respect. And that is the problem. That's the difficulty with developing applications and, you know, new financial primitives and coordinating with blockchain. Protocols don't innovate very quickly. It's kind of by design, and so they move very slowly. The applications on them also with blockchain are immutable. So doing this is really hard, and we don't have human institutions that are can rewrite these agreements, kind of retroactively go back, change some parameters, wire back money, say no, you know, you can't have that because that violates our notion of fairness. We can't do that. I would love if we took Matt Levine's line, financial blogger, newsletter writer over at Bloomberg, writes the best financial newsletter of all time, in my opinion, Money Stuff. He's watching with like equal parts delight, joy, and horror as crypto does what he calls speedrun financial history. There's all this innovation in finance that's happened over the last 500 years, all these painful lessons learned. No one in crypto is actually paying any attention to that. No one's actually reading any financial history. No one's actually, very, very few people are. And we're breaking ourselves on these lessons as we're learning them painfully ourselves. He wrote a 40,000 word piece about crypto about a few months ago. Definitely check that out. Even if you're a crypto OG, he's just one of the best, most lucid writers. Highly, highly recommend.
Very cool. Okay. And it definitely sounds like there's a paradigm shift when you're developing for blockchain, where if you're doing something in JavaScript, like you just, you know, git push something to your application, you update the code, and you're good to go. And so you can move fast and break things in some sense and iterate over time. And with smart contracts, it's much, much more important to get it right on the first try, depending how you write your contract. And as soon as you open up yourself to that expressivity or chance to update, that's also the exact attack loophole that they can come in from. So is that directionally right? Like, it's a paradigm shift of how to think differently about developing Web 2 and Web 3?
Absolutely. And it absolutely is. And that is why it is fantastic that the settlement layer of Bitcoin is very, very, very simple. We haven't experienced like a hack or a break of the Bitcoin protocol. We likely never will. That's fantastic. The application layer on top of it being distinct, is I believe great. It preserves the money layer, preserves the settlement layer. And so, because we're the standard can't be and isn't, we have to make perfect applications every time. What we do is, we start with very, very simple things, and we make sure that they work very, very well and reliably, like we did with Bitcoin. And then now with, like, for instance, on Stacks, with these smart contract applications. I mean, this is really why the financial primitives within DeFi, you don't want to build a very complex app on the blockchain. You want to make it as simple as possible. And what's really being tracked is who owns what and kind of why, like which economic resources that we're associating and instantiating in these tokens, who owns it, and what are the rules upon which that ownership can change. That's pretty much it. You want to stick there. More complex, esoteric things, let that exist in your your front end application or wherever, you know, where the stakes are, you know, even a little bit less. But there absolutely is a paradigm shift in the importance of it. And I'll tell you, anyone who's published a smart contract in mainnet can feel it. It's a different feeling, and I and you're very well supported. At Stacks, we have a ton of developer tooling, a ton of support for developers, not just on the application side, the front end side, et cetera, but the underlying smart contract logic. Clarinet comes with really powerful testing features and a testing harness. There are, you know, these deployment plans that allow for reproducible deployments, whether to your local network or to testnet or to mainnet. So you can reliably spin up your application, just battle test it as much as you can, and then put it out there. There's, you know, also auditing companies and you know, developers for hire that can look over code, these sorts of things. It's difficult. It's not trivial. And that's I think, the cost or the pain of what is otherwise a completely brand new kind of digital quantity. These, like, scarce, immutable tokens that anyone can spend. If you have internet access and a private key, you can access Stacks wallet or Bitcoin wallet, and you can use these systems, and no one can stop you. And the cost of that is, you know, we've then now have to front load the development and make sure that we're building really, really smart, really well tested and well designed, well planned applications. We have, again, just to continue to plug Stacks and Hero. Hero is the developer tooling company. There's just a bunch of very talented, smart people working to support our users, these application developers. So, I think. Also, you mentioned something that I don't think I totally responded to, which is this point about the fury over the Stacks having a token. I didn't mean to, like, elide that or move past it. I think it's a valid criticism. I think so. One, that criticism was incorporated into the SBTC proposals, and actually, I don't remember exactly the final word on it, but SBTC, which is the token, can now actually be used to pay transaction fees, which means that now native Bitcoin is the kind of the coin of the realm for paying transaction fees, and so that line of criticism has been incorporated, that line of feedback, and it's just one of the many other things that's being worked on right now, actively developed in. By the decentralized blockchain team, all over the internet, all over the world, on this Nakamoto and SBTC proposals. So that's what I would say with that. And I would also say I do not expect with this SBTC peg. I think it's very wise that people wait and watch to see what happens. On day one, I'm not going to be moving all of my Bitcoin onto SBTC. I'm going to be just alongside everyone else, testing, writing applications, seeing what happens. And I expect the market capitalization of SBTC to grow and to rise, because right now there's $500 billion, I don't know the latest number, but, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of BTC sitting totally idle. And the only way for it to be used, quote unquote, productively in a kind of capitalistic fashion is to use centralized entities. So, you know, your BlockFi's and your, you know, other centralized money markets for you to then send your BTC and then borrow against. And we saw what happened. I don't want to badmouth anyone in the industry. And there's a lot of ways in which these centralized entities have proven us wrong. And so we want decentralized alternatives to finance, especially in this 100-year future, where Bitcoin is the monetary reserve. It is the hard money upon which all transacting and lending happens. That in that world in which central banks, basically, you know, as to very, very briefly capitulate the theory of what may happen in a hyper Bitcoinization, we're going to just continue to inflate and inflate away the value purchasing power of these dollars and other currencies to the point where there may well be a hyperinflating event, And just sort of one by one, people will continue to move to Bitcoin. How that transition goes, I don't know. And the world in which there's a Bitcoin reserve, that's how central banks clear, you know, or you know, settle between each other. That is how commercial banks, you know, that's that they borrow with the Fed. They keep their reserves at the Fed, their Bitcoin reserves, and then they, you know, lend to businesses, etc. That world, I would love to see open source, decentralized financial infrastructure that powers those, for instance, commercial banks. We can see how much money or how much Bitcoin is held at these various places, and then mathematically deduce, you know, the amount of kind of like sats, like accredited money, like loaned into existence. We can then have a much firmer grasp on what the money supply is, what prices are. That world, Bitcoin, I believe, is not enough. And to have financial applications built on top of it, I want to see blockchains that provide this financial application layer, this computation layer that is open source, immutable, censorship resistant, just like, you know, Bitcoin is. But Bitcoin right now cannot support these kinds of like smart contract logic, this kind of smart contract logic that I'm describing. So that is someone's going to build that. That's going to happen. And it's just a question of who.
Very well said. And it makes it abundantly clear why we need layers on top to make that more possible, and also to sandbox these experiments that are necessary, but you don't want to just like shove them into a BIP and put it on Bitcoin Core. I have one more question for you, but I want to rehash a couple of things you said, just because I think people get lost in certain things. So like the token, for example, is very interesting, because if you're trying to bootstrap a blockchain, you need a way to incentivize people to mine. But if you don't have a token, it comes through transaction fees, so you have a bootstrapping issue. And that also leads to chain reorgs, where someone can come in quickly and take over the network. So it becomes weird. It's hard to trust something, which is why with RSK and Blockstream, you saw federations from the jump. That's how you solve that problem. So with a token, because you have economics in play, you can have an open membership network from the start, and it has that utility. With the Nakamoto release, you're gonna get something where the token will be for pegout transactions and for stacking, but like you said, the gas will be auto-converted from SBTC, so you have a peer abstraction layer that if you just wanna be a peer BTC player, you can do that likely within the years, is what the timelines look like.
Thank you for making that point. And Stacks, it kind of rode this benefit of having a token, and then converted a regime change into this SBTC and Bitcoin trend. Is converting, is that's a decentralized process that, you know, requires community support. The alignment of the community is on that. But that happened because of the token. Crude analogy is Ethereum was able to actually enter into a proof of stake regime change. You can't do that from the outset, because you can't. It's really hard to reliably create the decentralization of the token to then have something like robust decentralized stakers. You couldn't do that now. People would make 1,000 wallets. They'd claim your token. So it'd really be like lots of centralization and concentration of that. But they said first they had the proof of work mining, and then they moved that. But anyway, that's just to kind of fortify that point about like kind of doing things in one regime and then transferring over into another to kind of ride some of those incentive benefits. So, but anyway, was there more that you were going to say?
No, that was great. I want to jump back one with my last kind of question, because this idea of developer tooling, I still don't fully grasp. So you mentioned quite a bit of it, things like Clarinet, which I've experimented with. It's fantastic. It's amazing how much you can do in the terminal for static analysis. Deployment plans, I'm sure there's a bunch of other stuff as far as like API endpoints. And for the devs, like, you know what those mean. But for a newbie, and I'm in the middle now, you hear things like consensus-built MetaMask, and you hear things like Infura on ETH, and I know what the words are, but I don't know what they mean or how important they are. And so when it comes to dev tooling, building on a blockchain, and having an entity like Hero inside an ecosystem, what do those things really do, and how do they really help developers? Like, how critical are they for a blockchain and builders in a blockchain?
Yeah, so you mentioned Consensus and Infura. So those are companies that make the developer tooling for Ethereum. They make the wallet, MetaMask, and then Infura is like, they basically do a lot of indexing of the chain state and then provide APIs so that you can actually, instead of, you know, as an application developer, it's time consuming to spin up a node, index the entire blockchain, and then build up an indexing layer, right? So you have the raw data of all of the transactions that comprise each block, but then to actually build up like, well, what does user A, well, combine all of user A's transactions and then net out how many tokens they actually have. That is not, it's logically entailed in the blockchain, but it's not actually like, you can't go to the blockchain through Blockchain Explorer and like look at the block and then see that sum total. You need to build a kind of a layer on top that actually does that indexing and that interpretation for you. As a blockchain developer, you're trying to build a new application for your user, right? You're trying to build a money market or a new NFT collection or housing registry, whatever it is. To have to do that too is an enormous undertaking. You really, and there are people that do it better and at scale. They provide like Hero that has a Hero wallet, like Consensus has MetaMask. The Hero wallet is the most popular wallet in the ecosystem. We have the API, we have APIs as well for the Stacks chain, right? So we've built that indexing layer, and then we have various API endpoints that do this kind of interpretation and then kind of returning whatever it is that you're querying. All of that logic already being done. So those are how developers take advantage of the work already being done by us. Clarinet is for developing smart contracts. So, and really tied intimately with that is our VS Code extension. So VS Code is the developer environment. It's where it is that you're actually typing in the syntax that comprises your smart contract. So clarity.clair is the kind of Clarity files. You are, you know, writing functions, you are writing data members, like, you know, important data or important variables that your later down contract logic needs to references. VS Code provides syntax highlighting, a ton of features like code completion, best practices, check checkers, so making sure that you're, you know, the developer supported in their best practices. We also made the Explorer for the ecosystem, right? So to look at the Blockchain Explorer, which uses our own APIs. We're kind of building on top of it. You know, Hero is able to create really powerful tools and services and features for our users because of the raw talent that we have, but then also we're using our own tools, we're using our own APIs, et cetera. We're also, I'll give us a little preview to your users. We're also building something, a new product that's going live. I feel like I'm going to get in trouble for saying it, but
we can cut if we have to, if there's no alpha legal out.
We'll cut if we have to, if I get in trouble. I'll just say March 21st. March 21st, we're announcing a new tool that we've been working on very hard, and is just another step in our commitment to creating a good developer experience so that developers are doing less fiddling with things that can be automated, things that can be taken care of by others, and they're just working on their core like logic or the core differentiating features of their application for their users. So the less time they're spent like doing repetitive tasks, the less time they're spending, you know, like setting up their own node and indexing a blockchain, like all that's good and fine, but there's a lot of time that could be saved using these tools, a lot of time and pain. And so does that answer your question?
That was exactly what I was looking for. So thank you for breaking that down. That's really helpful. we're coming up on time. We covered an absolute ton, so thank you so much for coming on here. Any last thoughts or things I didn't cover that you want to drop right here?
No, this has been fantastic. It's been a real treat. Like I said, I've been the interviewer, and so and I loved our guests. I get to hand select our guests. I'm really blessed and lucky to do that. And I've just, like, you know, in my last year being at 9 months being at Hero, I've come into a lot of knowledge and understanding that hasn't just, like, made its way out. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to speak into that. You were a great interviewer, and come check out Hero, hero.so. There's a ton of information about our products and services, and also tutorials about how it is that you can get started building these applications, creating an NFT collection. Kenny Rogers over at the Stacks Foundation also has a ton of great content for newcomers to the field. Clarity Universe is on the Stacks .org, the Stacks Foundation. It's a nonprofit that supports the ecosystem. They have created a standalone self-paced course for how to learn Clarity. They were also running live Clarity cohort-based courses, so you could get in there with other people. There's a Stacks Accelerator, Stacks Ventures. There's funding in the ecosystem and environment. If you have a good idea, if you're working on the, you know, ordinals, you've got an idea for a new either collection or accessibility tool or something related to it, and you are looking to get support and funding, there's, you know, a ton of opportunity for you there, whether working with ordinals or building an application on Stacks. There's a ton of support out there. And if you have a good idea, come reach out to, come to visit our Discord, come DM me, find me on Twitter, that sort of thing.
Fantastic. I'll add two more little nuggets. 100 Days of Clarity is an excellent resource from Setsus, who's an engineer in the ecosystem. The first 20 days are on YouTube, so just type in 100 Days of Clarity. And if you're building on Clarity and you want to build where the puck is going, SBTC is one of the biggest changes that I see coming to Stacks. And you did a fantastic episode with Igor, who's one of the core, he's leading the team that's leading that charge on SBTC. So Web3 on Bitcoin, Igor on YouTube, it'll pop up. Highly, highly recommend if you want to learn Clarity, everything he just mentioned, and then, like, how to use these new things and use SBTC as a SIP10 token, that's going to be the place to jump to. So I think it's a pretty good way to wrap. So Max, again, thank you so much for doing this. This has been a fantastic episode.
Yeah, this has been real fun. Thanks so much, Jake. Really appreciate you, and I'll see you around.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right here waiting.
I've been waiting now, I've been trying to figure out a way to make it out.